This is Right from the Deep.
I'm Karen Ball.
And I'm Erin Taylor Young. And this is the podcast from writers for writers answering the question,
why am I doing this?
As writers, editors,
and a literary agent,
we're in the deep with you.
We want you not just to survive here, but to thrive, to embrace the deep and find your truest story, your truest message. And we're going to do that by bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information specifically geared to encourage, refresh, and equip you in the deep.
You can get the episode show notes, lots more information and encouragement, and your free audio download.
Yay!
5 crucial ways to safeguard your writer's heart at writefromthedeep.com.
And here's the show. Guess what? It's time for fun stuff.
Fun stuff. Hooray. Yay. Okay. So we told you before that Karen and I were doing some craft books together and they're fun.
Right. Yay.
So I am getting close to finishing my part on the book on character. See, Karen and I have this back and forth process. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more just for fun at some point. Now, so it's her turn with the book on editing, and it's my turn with the book on characters, and we're going to be trading, you know, later this month, probably. So that's where we're at. That's that update for ya.
Yay. And June is just around the corner. I can't believe how fast 2017 is going by. So June 22nd through 24th, why does that matter to you? Because that's when Erin and I will be in La Mirada, California at
Yay.
The SoCal Christian Writers Conference.
Yay!
We'll be speaking there and we'll be meeting with folks. So come join us. You can find out more information about it at SoCalCWC.com. So check it out and come join us there. And now, here's the show.
Welcome, friends. We are so glad that you are here with us today. And again, we're happy because we have a guest. Yay!
Yay!
We have Alton Gansky with us, and he's an author, and just he does all kinds of cool things. But as y'all know, we're going to let Karen do the intro because she knows everybody. Say it with me,
yeah,
people.
Not everybody, but I know Al because we worked together, these many years ago. He is a writer. I was his editor, acquisitions editor at a publishing house, and we just formed a great relationship. Al is one of those remarkable people who not only knows his stuff in the craft and is a great writer, but he is receptive to editing. I said to him earlier, it was always so nice that you liked editing. He says, well, no, I didn't like it, but I appreciated it. And that's a huge change for a lot of editors to have somebody who actually appreciates what you're doing instead of treating you like the enemy who has to die. So it was just a lot of fun to get to know Al and his wife, Becky. And Al is just an amazing author, 24 novels, 5 novellas, a screenplay, 11 nonfiction works. He's the principal writer of 9 other novels and 2 nonfiction books. He has been a Christie Award finalist for A Ship Possessed, which, by the way, was one of my dad's all-time favorite books. My dad loves your books. Al loved your books. And he's an Angel Award winner for Terminal Justice. And he also recently received the ACFW Award for Best Suspense Thriller for his work on Fallen Angel. So Al has just got this amazing talent as a writer, an amazing talent as someone who speaks truth and speaks it in a way that people can hear and receive and be receptive to. And so we really appreciate that for him. He is currently co-hosting a podcast called First in Fiction with his son, Erin. And you can find that podcast if you go to erongansky.com, AaronGansky.com. In addition to his own writing, Al consults and provides editing writing services to several CBA publishers and video scripts and written copy. He just does it all. He's amazing. So Al, we're just delighted to have you here. And we are so looking forward to our time together.
Well, thank you for having me. And after listening to the introduction, I now know why I'm so tired.
Oh, Karen and I were talking about being tired. So good. Now we're going to hear all about how you deal with that and what you do when you're tired. But one of the first things we always do, Al, is put our guests on the spot. And we ask them, what does the deep mean to you?
Well, I imagine it has many different meanings for different people based on their their travels through life. For me, the deep has been very positive, and at times been very negative. It's been something endured rather than embraced. And other times, you know, you're forced to embrace it, and you see at the end why you may have gone through that. And I'm getting old now, so I've lived long enough to have many scars, and try to learn from them and then pass them on to anyone who will listen. Not the scars, but what I learned about the scars. I'll pass the scars on to them too if they want those, but usually they don't. So I think the deep is part of the travel that we walk through at times, darkness. And a lot of people don't realize that there's a few places in Scripture where God is described as light, but there's a couple places where it says God moves in the darkness. Right. And that's sometimes where you find him doing his best work. It's not in the light, but in the darkness, which is good because we often end up there.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that we talk about fairly often is that, especially for American Christians, our first reaction when we get into those difficult places, those really deep places, not, you know, like just you can't find a parking lot at Costco, which is a universal issue for anybody who goes to Costco, but those really profound, deep places, our first reaction is to get out. You know, it's like, show me what I need to do and then let me the heck out of here. And although, like you said, it's difficult to embrace the deep, we try to encourage folks that, you know, there's a reason that we end up in those places, whether it's a consequence of our own actions, whether it's that God has this journey for us into this place in order for us to be more refined. We need to learn how to dwell there and to not try to get out before the timing is right for us to leave. So when you have found yourself in those difficult places, how have you been able to stay in them and learn from them? What did you utilize to help you to be still and hear God and ask him what he had for you there rather than scrambling to get out of it?
Yeah, again, very difficult to answer, especially succinctly. But I think what I've learned over the years of my life is, in years in ministry also, is that we are not promised that rose garden. Mm-hmm. And if we do get the rose garden, we get the thorns also.
Yeah.
And, you know, many Christians think erroneously that once they become a Christian, everything's going to be fine and there's never going to be any challenges. And I used to teach my people, well, they crucified Jesus. And he lived the perfect life. So there's a good chance that you're probably going to face some problems of your own. And we're not promised that. We do go through difficulty. It is the course of life. And so I used to tell myself, and still do at times, is what you have to do is accept it and lean into it. Hmm. The other option is to just stop moving forward, or you can't even back out of the problem. Sometimes there's nothing you can do to get away from it. So really your only positive choice is to exercise that faith and lean into the problem, move on, keep going, and do whatever it is you can do.
You know what I like about what you were saying both now and before? You were talking about traveling in the deep. And sometimes I think we feel like you get in the deep and it's like just a hole and you don't go anywhere. You just sit there. But what you're saying is a neat new insight, because we do. We travel in that place, in that deep, in that dark. We travel, and leaning into that travel is how we get where we need to go ultimately.
You know, some of the most remarkable things we will ever see are found in the deepest caves.
Amen.
I don't know if you've ever been to some of the great caverns and the like. You need some light, of course. Otherwise, you end up walking into some big hole. And I think that's what the Lord provides us with. He doesn't necessarily provide us with all the light we want. I always want more light.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I could handle more light, if I'm being honest here. Yeah. He gives us enough light that we need and that we can handle. And then if you use that light, you see remarkable things. So that's part of life's journey, is we're going to fall down. And it doesn't matter if we trip and fall. What matters is whether or not we get up.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that counts. Falling doesn't count. Getting up does. And so some of the most remarkable things are found in the dark, in the deep. And from that, then we can have even more adventure in life, learn from it. I'm not trying to sugarcoat this. I don't want people to think, this is fun. I like going through the dark times in my life. You know, I like it when bad things happen and, you know, grandkids go to the hospital and have brain surgery. You know, what fun is that? Yeah. There's nothing fun about it. But the satisfaction comes from having been faithful through it.
And there's a difference between fun and joy, you know?
Yeah. I like that concept that you just talked about with the fact that it's God's mercy that he doesn't give us more light. It's God's mercy because he knows if we had the light and we saw the whole journey, the whole path, we'd be terrified. Mm. That's a really great insight. So if we shift that into the world of writing, then you've been in this career for quite a long time. I think you started when you were 3. And so you're now 23 and just looking great for your age. And as you've gone through this journey, when you hit those dark places, those deep places in the journey, what's kept you going?
Well, the first thing I do is quit. And I encourage people to quit. The only proviso is you can't stay quit. You know, quit as often as you want, but you just can't stay quit. So every once in a while, it's get up, walk out. I'm done. Career's over. I'm going to find something else to do. And usually a good night's sleep, I'm up and raring to go. You know, and sometimes it takes a little bit longer. So I think what I recognize in my own writing life and things associated with writing, helping other writers, you know, so teaching and sometimes editing and the like, is I have my greatest satisfaction when I write. Mm-hmm. It's also the toughest thing that I do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to start. And other times I would rather go take a nap. I always want to take a nap. I was a pastor for 22 years and I helped other people take naps every Sunday morning. You know, so I'm trying to say it's my turn now, to do that. And as difficult as it is, and at times it's very easy to write, other times it is, you know, it's a root canal. But I find that even if I struggle through a difficult time, I will at the end of the day have greater satisfaction than if I did something else.
Wow. Wow. I love that. I'm interested, we were talking earlier, I'm interested in you mentioned being a pastor, the studies that you've done, your BA and your MA in biblical studies. How do you think that prepared you for the writing that you do now? Has that come into play at all?
You know, it has. I originally thought I was going to be a writer and I was going to write articles. And then I learned you'd starve to death if you depended on articles. And so I thought I would write nonfiction. It made sense. You know, that's what I dealt in. And I ended up instead writing a novel. And the novel's called By My Hands. And the story I like to tell about that, because there's an ongoing lesson in it for me, is the idea came to me at a children's hospital. I was a pastor. I was called to a children's hospital. And you hate getting those calls. For a child that had fallen out of a moving car. Well, unfortunately, I have a fiction writer's mind, it turns out, you know, so I was just picturing the worst kind of horrors. So let me cut to the chase on that. Child was fine. Car was barely moving, but that's not the word I got. That was news I could have used earlier. You know, so I'm preparing myself. I'm steeling myself. And I was still a very young man, very new to being a pastor. I was still in San Diego. And I went to Children's Hospital and I walked in, looked in a couple of the rooms, and then noticed the rest of the way in, all I looked at was the linoleum floor. Mm-hmm. And the reason was it hurt too much to look from side to side. Mm-hmm. So when I saw a bunch of children who had cancer, you could tell because of their bald heads and they're in there playing with each other. Well, that just ripped me to shreds. Mm-hmm. And I went and I did my work as a pastor. And then I walked out with my head down, got to the car, and then just this huge sense of shame washed over me. And I remember sitting there thinking, you know, I wish I had the gift of healing. And if I did, I wouldn't be a healer you saw on television. I would just go from hospital to hospital, sneak in, do this work of healing, sneak out. And that became the book By My Hands. I asked myself, then that's the what if. And so that was the first what if question I ever asked in writing. What if somebody did that? What would that look like? And that led to my first book, which led to the second book, which led to all these other books, about 50 books or so, two of them good. And
I disagree. I think there are quite a few more than two.
It always sounds so arrogant. I've written 50 books. You know, I've stumbled through most of them, but nonetheless, for me, that was the formative thing, is that out of my shame came a desire to, one, be better at what I do, and to tell the story of what these things might like. And that launched the career. Mm-hmm. So all it took was a child falling out of a moving car.
Oh, gosh. Our pastor on Sunday was teaching from First Peter, and he was talking about his message dealt with both shame and guilt, and how we walk in freedom from shame and guilt, or at least we should. But too many of us still go back to the past, relive the past, even though it's been forgotten and forgiven by the Lord for believers. We still go back to it and hold on to it. And he was saying, let go of it, walk forward. And what you just said, although you said it facetiously, oftentimes those core messages stem from the failure, stem from the places where we stumbled, stem from our looking at it and thinking, what would have happened if I had done this differently, or what would have happened if I'd been able to do A, B, C, or D? And then, like you said, that novelist mind takes it from there. But I think that sometimes it's our greatest failures where God plants those stories that will speak authentically to the people who will read our books.
You know, the great theologian Irma Bombeck said, guilt is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things I've learned in life. Guilt isn't fun, but you might as well learn something from it. Otherwise, you've wasted a good guilt.
Right.
You know, so if you have to go through that, or if you have to go through hardship, or you have to face fear, you might as well learn from it. Otherwise, it's a waste. You know, learn what you need to learn from it. And you don't know who you're going to be able to help by doing that.
I love how you use your experience walking through that hallway, and you put that, however way, shape, and form it came out, you put that in your book. That's a really, it's a transparent thing.
Well, things occasionally will come up. I don't like to pull from someone else's pain. I don't mind so much pulling from my pain to be able to come up with a story. But on the fiction side, it isn't about me, but I will use those experiences, and that's what writing is. We draw from our experiences. We don't necessarily relate all those details, but we know what it's like. If you lose a loved one, you know that hurt. So, for example, when I was still a young pastor, you know, I'd been called on to talk to people who'd lost parents and stuff like that, and I always felt kind of removed. I didn't know. Then my mother died. Then I knew.
Yeah.
Because I remember I had to call my wife, and I just broke down. I talked to my dad, and I talked to my brother, and I did all those things the preacher way. You know, I took care of them and met them. But when I heard my wife's voice, well, I just lost it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't calling as a minister, I was calling as a person. Well, that pain made me a better pastor, because next time I was called out to deal with somebody who'd lost a loved one, I'd walk the path. And the same thing with all the other deaths that have occurred in my life, I now understood. And sometimes when we write, that's what we're doing, is we're teaching other people what it's like to go through those things, even though they may not go through them.
Yeah.
But that very pain that you have in yourself, if you will open yourself to it, and trust me, I don't like it, but it will translate into the page.
Yeah.
And that's where people's lives are touched, is putting that kind of real life into the fiction, or even into nonfiction, where you can show some of that.
I remember writing A Test of Faith, which was about a mother-daughter relationship. And then the first half and the second half is about the daughter losing her mother. And I'd written that book because my editor, Julie Schwarzberg, came to me after my mom died and asked me to write a book about a woman dealing with her mother's death. And I remember when I was writing those scenes, where the mom was dying, I was just sitting here and weeping. And I had to walk away from the computer so many times, because you go back into those places, and exactly what you said, when you put it on the page and when it's coming out of the core of your own experience of hurt and loss or whatever, it has that ring of authenticity, but so much so that it impacts you first. And then that's how you know it's going to impact your readers, which is not to say, you know, take your pain and use it like some kind of a gimmick, but it's to say, be vulnerable. Let all of that experience come out on the page so that people will, like you said, be educated, they will benefit. And I think, too, for those who have walked that path, they'll know they're not alone. Mm-hmm. Too often we go into these difficult places and we feel like nobody has ever known this pain. I felt like that when my mom died. And yet a month after mom died, I was speaking at a writer's conference and I broke down while I was teaching the workshop. And people just came who were sitting there to listen, came up and put their arms around me and hugged me and prayed for me. And the women talked to me, you know, my mom died 10 years ago and I'm still not over it. It was an amazing experience that ministered to me and humbled me.
It's still that same idea of traveling in the deep, of walking that path in the deep, because there are people who have walked it before and people who will walk it behind us, and having that sense that others have been there and left little markers for us and little notes, you know, having that sense makes all the difference in the world.
You know, it's funny. We were just at the three of us were at the same writers conference. We were at the Florida Writers Conference a couple of weeks ago. And while I was there, one of the people that I was talking to, she said that her fear is that there's really no need for another book on the topic that she was writing on. She said, there are so many books out there already. Why? What can I possibly have to say that's different? And I was just thinking about this whole discussion. And my husband, in his life experiences, went through being abused as a child. His experience of abuse is a very personal thing. And yet there's to those who've been in that world, there's a universal experience that they will relate to. The reason that we need each person's book is that their voice and their experiences will bring to life new aspects of things that some have experienced and some haven't. Yeah. And so nobody can tell your story. Nobody can tell your experience of something the way that you can.
Yeah. So we are just about out of time. Al, we would love to ask you, though, what are maybe some final words of wisdom or encouragement that you want to leave with our listeners today?
Well, I was joking about giving up, and that's probably what the word of wisdom I try to pass on to you. Go ahead and give up. You can quit all you want. You just can't stay quit. Mm-hmm. And that's a normal thing. Sometimes that sense that I need to quit is really a need to step away for a moment and reflect. So don't be surprised by that. Every writer I know goes through it. Every honest writer I know goes through it. and especially if you're writing some good stuff, there's times when you're going to want to get up and walk away. And that might not be a bad thing. Every once in a while, get up, go to a movie or do something. When you come back, you're fresher. The subconscious has been able to work. So, yeah, it's okay to quit. You just can't stay quit. So quit for a day, quit for a week if you have to, but you can't stay quit.
Love That's it. Great. Thank you, Al. So thank you so much for being here with us today. We've really enjoyed our time with you, and we hope that everything that you put your hand to will continue to reach out to your readers and your listeners and bless them and teach them and illuminate their understanding of who they are and who God is in light of his word and in light of his truths. Thank you so much, Al, for everything that you do.
Thank you. It's been wonderful being with you.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks for listening today. We hope you found it helpful.
You might also like the backlist episodes, which you can find along with a free audio download, 5 Crucial Ways to Safeguard Your Writer's Heart, at our website, writefromthedeep.com.
If you'd like to support the show, and we would love it if you'd do that, you can contribute through the website.
To connect with us, go to the website or tweet us at KarenBall1, that's the number one, or Aaron T. Young.
So until next time,
embrace the deep.
Your writing and your life will never be the same.
Amen.
Amen.